Hey, everyone. We want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt's as the company who makes those rad all-over print button-downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They, of course, have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts, they do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
Hello there, and welcome to Thank the Maker, a podcast about heroes, princesses, scoundrels, hokey religions, ancient weapons, and all things Star Wars. I am Adam Russell.
I am Mike Forrester. Adam, it's just you and me again.
Just the two of us. Insert the rest of the lyrics.
Just the two of us. That's a good one. I haven't gone on tour yet this year, so I actually feel like I'm slowly becoming the most consistent member of Thank the Maker. And for me, that feels good. I mean, I love a consistent product that we can continue to put out because I think you guys just announced that you're going on tour with Yellow Card in Europe.
We are. Yes.
Tell me more about that.
Mostly UK.
Okay.
A little bit of mainland Europe.
Okay.
Which is pretty standard for us. It's always kind of been that way. We've done a ton of cities on that little bitty island. And then we end up doing I think four in mainland Europe, including like Belgium, Germany. Oh, we're going to Paris for the first time ever. Paris, France, of course.
Oh, that's great.
And one other country, but I don't know. It's going to be great. Double-decker buses, the whole nine. It's going to be awesome.
Interesting. Do you have a favorite city in as you describe mainland Europe? Is there a place that you're fond of thus far?
Hands down, my favorite city in all of Europe, I think second favorite city in the world, maybe.
Oh.
Is Salzburg, Austria.
Salzburg, Austria, which does sound like a wonderful place.
It is. The hills are alive with the sound of music.
Ah, true.
That's what it comes down to.
Right. The Von Trapps. So you said second favorite city possibly in the world. The mm-hmm. first, I assume, is not St. Louis, or?
Sorry to say, local friends, it's not St. Louis. It's wow. Tokyo.
Oh, Tokyo. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, sure. Well, Tokyo sounds fun. I'd like to go there for a Star Wars convention. Want to go?
Yeah, I'll consider it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Sounds good. Well, Nick can't join us tonight because he's in, I think he's playing in like an hour.
Yeah, every Wednesday on the whole tour, he has a show. So, completely hosed.
Right. Well, I will take over as the other bearded member of Thank the Maker, and we can talk about a kind of an interesting episode of Bad Batch. I feel like we're getting very close to the end here, and I feel like the pressure is getting to us at this point where I'm kind of going, what's going to happen here? Are you kind of feeling like, at least now that it's starting to shape up, because we have three more episodes or two more episodes?
This was 13, so we have two more.
Okay. Do you feel like the finale at this point is going to be like a Rebels 1 hour episode at this point?
I really hope so. I haven't seen details, right? They haven't disclosed anything, right?
No.
God, I hope so, man.
It's interesting.
There's so much to do.
This one is probably my first one that I went, now this is the one that I'm banging on it going, man, I want more out of this one.
Yes.
And I think what's interesting about this is being that, of course, that we knew we were going to have to get to this point eventually. What's interesting about this, as we're kicking the story down the road, I would have thought that we would have been a little bit further along in understanding exactly what the Empire was doing. But something tells me that there is, like, the fact that we've got this still a pretty... Like this series, I think the thing that we have to remind ourselves is like this series is still hugging Clone Wars in terms of the time mm-hmm. that's passed since the Order 66, right? So there's this part of me that's like, as much as I want to see, like, get us into Cassian Andor territory, you know, get us in, where's Narkina, all of this stuff. We're not there yet.
No.
Like, we're really not there yet. So I'm starting to feel like maybe Disney Animation has something coming down the line that's going to give us maybe a transitional period into Tales of the Empire, something. I'm just getting a feeling right now.
Yeah.
Are you feeling the same way?
For sure. Because if this was really truly wrapping up this story or this entire era's story, I don't think we'd be feeling what we're feeling right now, what you started this episode talking about.
Right.
Because there's just too much to do. And I'm completely cool with that. If the Bad Batch journey ends, if they end what's, you know, temporarily what's going on Mount Tantus, the majority of the Bad Batch die or they have to go into hiding in some way.
Right.
And then we carry on Omega's story. Mm-hmm. That seems like the most compelling thing to me. I want that so badly. Just sure. Star Wars Omega, whatever.
Sure.
And it's a great name too.
Sure. And this could be the tie-in with Ventress.
Yes.
That people were kind of speculating on. Do you think there's a point where, like, how much of this at this point do you feel like we have a formula for Star Wars where it's a lot of escapee, locked up, how are the heroes going to escape? Do you feel like this at this point, Star Wars animation specifically has kind of found its, like, are these familiar beats? Are we interested in seeing something different at this point? Because I'm curious as to how we can keep developing big stories like this that don't involve little episodes of this where it's like run and chase and get them back and mm-hmm. do all this kind of stuff. Just because I feel like we've seen Omega get captured essentially like three times now, right? And
right.
I'm kind of interested in seeing where this story is going to go. But I think if we don't get an hour finale, I'm going to be like, man, there's got to be something coming down the line because this seems like a crazy, I at least in the way that it was described when we read that little reviewer's note that was like, I've seen the rest of the Bad Batch episodes. It's just mm-hmm. prepare for it to destroy you. Mm-hmm. This, I was expecting something to happen a little bit more consequential in this episode. And I still really liked how much it set everything up for next week. And I feel like we're, you know, I'm curious your take on this.
Yeah. I think both of the things you said about the formula or whatever, I think there is a tried and true formula that they have for animation and for some of, you know, the live action series stuff too, to some extent.
Yeah.
But then there's also room to get weird and do completely like, detached arcs that are still incredibly consequential that aren't Adventure of the Week, like the middle Andor arc with Narkina, stuff
right.
like that.
Right.
So, and we get a little bit of a version of that in this season. You know, the way it started, that whole thing with Omega in the, what are we calling it now, Tantus base?
Sure.
Was very, very fresh to me.
Yeah.
All the imagery that, like, it was an incredibly cinematic debut, season premiere. So I think we have plenty of room to do all that. And then in terms of like teeing up the next thing, this episode went by so fast to me.
Yep.
When it was done, I was like, what? I looked at my watch like, what?
Yeah.
It's been at like 11 minutes. What is, no. But it was the full length.
Yep.
It was just so action packed and the train was moving so fast. But it is like you're saying, just teeing up something. And I think Disney knows what they're doing, despite what all the haters would say.
Right.
At least Filoni in this case and Jennifer Corbett and Brad Rao and everybody, they have a great idea of what kind of stories they want to tell. And they're doing it in a way that I don't think is fully paying off yet. I don't think it, I know it's not a short term payoff plan or vision.
Yep.
So I think this, much like the Clone Wars at the beginning, will long-term mean so much more to so many more people.
Right.
And there's even something we'll mention later about Omega's arc compared to some of the Clone Wars arcs. And I'm just ready for more. I'm completely confident in what they can give us, and I'm ready for more.
I feel the same way. I think if we're looking at it, I think the part that's interesting about this is I'm looking at our bingo cards, and I gotta appreciate that we shot for the moon on this one, right? Like we were talking like they're gonna tie in the Narkina prison system and Boba Fett's gonna come back and like all, you know, like I think what's really interesting about this is Brad Rao and Jennifer Corbett, to be a Star Wars producer, you get the keys to the story kingdom, right? And I think what this show really highlights is constraint, right? Is almost like a patience that if it would be very hard for me to not, you know, I almost think like Filoni's probably possibly guilty of this, where it's like, let me find a way to bring all my favorite characters back into my show, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that we haven't gotten a fresh green painted Boba Fett pre-Empire, that we haven't gotten a lot of these other, you know, obvious Easter eggs, but like, you know, we haven't gotten Bossk and we haven't gotten any of these other characters that we had come to known to show up a little bit in Clone Wars. And so I have to really appreciate their constraint with saying the story is about this crew. The story is about, you know, we don't want Boba Fett to come on screen, and here, watch, Boba Fett's coming on screen next week. But I'm just saying, like, the show is about the characters that they wrote. The show is about the story that is being told, and they don't need these other outside pieces to sit there and go, hey, you like this. Remember, you like this. This is Star Wars. And I have to give them a lot of credit for that, because as much as I've gotten used to the modern, you know, you went and saw Ghostbusters. We could probably talk about this in the after show. But it's almost like we're getting to a point where the fans, if it's connected to a universe that we're familiar with, it's like the fans almost like have a hard time looking for Easter eggs or looking for remember berries and going, you know, just kind of like because we're so, that's all that stuff has been kind of jammed down our throats over the last 10 years of being like, remember that character? We're bringing him back. Remember Jurassic Park? We're bringing him back. Ghostbusters, we're bringing him back, you know. And I have to give these guys a lot of credit, because Bad Batch is still a very authentic story that doesn't rely on other parts of Star Wars to tell a great story arc. So I think that's important.
Yeah. I would say it's the most underrated Star Wars property maybe ever, because it's going to be done after three seasons, so it hasn't had the time to build an entire generation of a fan base like the Clone Wars. It will see, you know, the fans are there, and it will see its true appreciation at some point, but it hasn't had the time, and it being animation that automatically kind of chops off an entire segment of the potential viewership. So it's in this place where it's this incredibly high-quality thing telling incredible stories that so many people don't even know exists.
Yeah.
But we're here for it.
And I'm with you on that. I think what's interesting, in addition to the points that have already been brought up, is that Star Wars is really getting to a point where it's starting to rely on the fandom to actually go back, and it's referencing its own material at this point. And I know that we've have all kinds of examples of things like this, but you know, you're kind of sitting here going, man, the next big animation for them is Tales of the Empire.
Yeah.
And if you didn't watch Rebels and you didn't watch Ahsoka, your kid might be watching Star Wars Tales of the Empire and thinking, oh, that could look cool. For some reason, if they decide to watch animation now, even though they haven't, you're going to be lost. You have to know who Morgan Elsbeth is. You have to know what a Night Sister is. You have to know who these stories are. And it's interesting at this point that we get that Star Wars is kicking. I mean, I feel like if you're a fan of Star Wars enough to know these stories, these are clearly made for the fans. This is not really a, you know, here's the latest bus stop, go ahead and get on, we don't need you to look back from where you came. I mean, this is all stuff that's doubling down on traditionally unsupported media on a global marketing level, right? So I don't know, it's very interesting. I think there's a case for going, where is the next generation of Star Wars fan? And is it Gen Alpha? Is it Gen Z? Because a lot of my college students who work for us, they are not Star Wars. They're not Star Wars obsessed like we are.
Yeah.
Because they almost feel like it's too overwhelming at this point. And I'm like, I would have never thought that, because I grew up when there were just three movies. So
yeah, that is a weird thing, because it's not just, it's so many things. It's so much content, and it can be intimidating to catch up on, unless you were kind of indoctrinated young and then a little later into youth or adolescence, you go, oh yeah, I like that thing. And you have a resurgence like we both did in, right, in our, you know, yeah, late teens, early 20s, whatever.
Right.
If you don't have that, it's overwhelming. And then the alternative to getting into this giant overwhelming world is to just watch Mr. Beast or Dude Perfect or whatever's on YouTube or whatever's on, you know, TikTok. And it's just like, you know, you just get the serotonin hit over and over and over from whatever shit gets thrown in front of your face. So yeah, boomer alert, real old guy talk here. So,
oh, that's great.
We got a lot of stuff to talk about. So let's get moving. But before we get into Stolen Plans, I do want to say on the score, again, I know we say this every week, but like just when you think the score can't get any better, the Kiner family drops this thing on us.
I loved it.
Like the very first note hit so hard, and like at frame one of the whole thing, brong, it just like landed so hard, so foreboding. And it set the tone from frame one, big synths, battle drums, that kind of stuff. So ominous. Yep. And then visually, yet again, incredibly beautiful, wide establishing shots that look like matte paintings that are, as we learned recently, actually based directly on the concept art, not just conceptually, but concept art used as the actual base in the rendering.
Yeah.
Scott Zenteno, friend of the pod and concept artist for Lucasfilm, shared recently on their Instagram, what was it, there's sort of like a big dam.
Yeah.
From last episode.
Yep.
In Instagram stories that said, you know, something like, love to see when art department just uses my concept art as the actual base for it.
And it was so little of it was modified. I mean, you're talking, and that goes to show you the concept art has to be awesome. Like it in some ways, what's crazy about concept art, because we're so used to seeing the art of books and all that stuff, and you can see how, you know, especially Din Djarin, right? The Mandalorian's look changed 15 times before we landed on the one that we got in the show. But this was like, they just took the matte painting and they just said, here, just add a little animated truck coming in. It was like, whoa, yeah, nice work. So shout out to Scott. They're a friend of the pod, and they went on Star Cruiser with us, and like they're huge Star Wars fan. I mean, the best kind of fan, incredibly kind person, and also just an incredible creative all around. So it's really cool to see when we get to see these little tidbits of when this behind the scenes gets brought to the front. It's awesome.
Love it. Hey everyone, we want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt's as the company who makes those rad all over print button downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They of course have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts. They do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
Mike, you want to do Stolen Plans?
Let's do it.
What have you done with those plans?
The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 13, Into the Breach. Debuted today, April 17th, 2024, on Disney+. The Disney+ description, the Batch prep for a gambit in enemy territory. And did they? Runtime was 25 minutes, directed by Saul Ruiz, written by supervising director Brad Rao. Always nice to see Brad get just in the weeds on this one. It features all of the actors who previously voiced the Force-sensitive children, and now Nia Singh Padilla as Sammy, who had no dialogue prior in this episode. Which Sammy is which character?
The blue skin. I can't remember the species.
Oh, yes. Oh, Mirlin?
Holding the baby.
Mirlin. Was it? No, Mirlin, that was the green kid with the markings under his eyes.
Oh, is the blue skin the same species as Senator Chuchi?
Pantoran?
Yeah, right? She's Pantoran,
yep,
right?
Yeah. We'll go back, and I'm sure the patrons will jump in on this one. But the child actor was credited only with a handful of shorts on IMDb, so this might be a newcomer, which is pretty exciting for them. It's a short episode, only 25 minutes of runtime, so let's talk about that real quick, because this one flew by. Speaking of flying, this one definitely went by quick.
It's straight back into it. That's the thing. You know, it's short, but so much happens in terms of, like, the pace.
Right.
You know, Bad Batch, like the title says, into the breach, you know, right back in it. Bad Batch is heading right back in the fray, back in the lion's den, back to Tantus to try to save Omega
into
again.
Into the chute, Flyboy?
Exactly. So we pick up where we left off with Hunter, Wrecker, Crosshair, and Rampart, but they're on this planet that we'll talk about later. Echo returns. Welcome back. It's about time, bud, to help. He's in a stolen Imperial shuttle. They have
now,
a plan.
Adam, do you also think we did a little breakdown for our patron subscribers where we were looking at trying to figure out what was the head? We thought it was an AT-AT, but it's not. It's an earlier model. Did you notice the front, the cockpit, and the guns on the side of this thing?
Yeah, isn't this, have we seen this model before, or is it like a mashup?
We have, but do you think that maybe we were looking at the wrong thing in the Tales of the Empire trailer?
Because of what we're seeing on the shuttle? What are you saying?
I'm saying in that screen grab, we were trying to deliberate what that was.
Yeah.
And we were like, we couldn't exactly match it up, right? Like, we were still looking for the actual one. Do you think it was one of these shuttles?
Oh, yeah, because we could only see the head.
It's got the front turrets and everything. And when it landed, I was like, oh my gosh, did we miss that?
That is very possible.
Interesting.
Yeah, because this is one of these, this era.
Yes.
Which goes all the way up to almost to Rebels, I guess, right?
Right.
But it's a version of what becomes the Lambda class, and there are the different variants, like just like the sort of executive shuttle and then the one with all the cargo space.
And then eventually all getting all this way to Return of the Jedi with Shuttle Tiderium. So
yeah,
I like it. It's cool. It's a familiar style design. It's the fold-up wings, the gull wings, if you call them, or whatever. Unbelievably cool. I dig it.
I love it. That was always one of my favorites. So they have a plan. They strip their armor of the custom paint jobs they've had over time. I don't know what the point is. They're still not wearing trooper armor. I was hoping they would steal the TK armor and go in disguise, and then we get a hit on the bingo card.
Nice. Of course.
I thought of something, though, while I was putting together the den. There's maybe a reason they didn't do it. Not where the characters didn't do it, but why the writers maybe skipped it.
Sure.
We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
So they're going to do that. They're going to put Rampart in an Imperial captain's uniform. He's not happy about being a captain.
What a jerk.
Take the stolen shuttle. What a jerk. Take the stolen shuttle to Imperial Station 003, orbiting Coruscant. Finally have a name for that thing. They're going to find a science vessel headed for Tantus, steal the navigational data, go to Tantus, kick Imperial ass. But ultimately, they end up having to improvise, as is tradition.
Right.
They get the information. They can't get it remotely, the information. So Echo has to board the science vessel and disengage the proximity sensors so the rest of the Bad Batch can sneak up in the shuttle, attached to the bottom of the vessel, and hitch a ride, which they were able to do because they were inverted.
Yep.
Ryan, will you listen to this one, please, and get my back on that? Cool. It's actually like 1.5. But back on Tantus, we actually start on Tantus, but to bring you up to speed on that, Omega meets the Force-sensitive children, like we talked about, including Little Baron, who was captured in Episode 10. Identity Crisis, the little sort of like four-eared cat kind of species.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a baby.
Definitely a baby.
We were thinking like toddler or baby or whatever in that episode. Definitely a baby with the goo-goo, gaga, give me my toy, I'm going to suck on a binky kind of vibe. The kids are super depressed, defeated, like just resigned to their fate. But Omega steps up, and this is an awesome moment for Omega in her arc where she's now in this leadership position.
Right.
And she's not only in the leadership position, but she's like up for the challenge and excited about the challenge because she tells them, I've escaped before and I'll do it again. And here's how it's going to go down.
Now, do you think Emery Carr intentionally left Omega with a box full of toys?
I'm leaning towards yes at this point and hoping yes.
There was a little kind of like look back where like Omega looks down and Emery almost like kind of looks back as like, I gave you enough time to do that. You should have done that by now.
Mm.
I saw that little look in there and I was like, yeah.
Yeah. That's tight.
So I feel like, you know, then we got the other doctor. What was the other doctor's name?
I didn't commit that to memory, but that's the first time we've actually seen close up one of the other doctors, right?
One of the other doctors, and there was a male doctor too, which I thought was interesting, but he didn't look like a clone.
Right.
So I was like, ooh, okay. So we've got, what's interesting though, is that Emery is a clone of genetic makeup,
mm-hmm.
but the other doctors don't look like clones. Emery doesn't mm-hmm. really look like a clone. Omega, I mean, she's too young. She does kind of look a little like Boba, but I don't know. This is very interesting at like what they're doing here, which makes me think that other people are being cloned possibly against their own will, right? Yeah. So there could be something going on here, but I thought that was pretty interesting that we finally got to look kind of up in that crow's nest. We got to see more in there than we've ever had. And also there seems to be a little bit of a distrust of, you know, I get the sense that it's a little, I don't know what I want to say, like maybe a little backstabby of people are trying to rise in the ranks. They're trying to prove to Hemlock that they have a purpose within the Empire that's of higher, of kind of a higher need than just saying, just stick me up here. Which is why, you know, that one doctor was like, I don't think that's a good idea. You shouldn't leave Omega down. They shouldn't talk to each other. She's like, you know, I'm the chief doctor here. I think it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's super on brand with everything Imperial, especially the way it's been framed the past few years with, you know, Andor, all the Imperials there. It's just, it's cutthroat as hell.
Right.
You know, they're establishing that, like really solidifying the idea that the Empire isn't just this evil empire, but it's a reflection of the Sith from the top down, whether or not they know it. Like the, all,
oh, you're
all,
saying like everyone's in a power, like a power struggle to get to the top.
Yes.
Yeah. I like that.
I don't want to work there, but,
that's not, I don't want to do that.
Good storytelling. We mentioned earlier about Omega and her arc, the cool thing. And we said something last week about her arc kind of being a condensed version of another arc. But what it really reminds me of is Ahsoka's arc.
Ooh, tell me more.
Partly for us as viewers, and partly for her as a character, you know, that as viewers being, you know, this yippy little kid who's kind of annoying becomes this strong, amazing character that we're all huge fans of. But then on a character level, on a deeper, less like, you know, cynical, who's this little kid kind of viewer level, on a character level, it is this coming of age thing
sure.
from a little yippy kid who just wants to have fun and thinks stuff is cool.
Right.
To someone who comes into their own and becomes a teacher, becomes a mentor, becomes like someone who has their own unique skills and powers and isn't just a sidekick of, you know, a more powerful leader or authority figure, but becomes that themselves. And it's obviously much shorter, you know, it's a 3-season arc and she's not where Ahsoka ended up, you know, defeating someone like Maul, but she's on her way.
Right.
And this, even like the physicality, the positioning of her, the way she sort of leans forward and puts her elbows on the table, has this authoritative feel to it that you wouldn't have expected from that little kid with the head jewelry in episode one, you know?
Right, right.
And I think it's beautiful.
I think there is something too on that point that we always have to remind ourselves that Omega watched Bad Batch be born, right? So in some ways they've kind of referenced it that, you know, the Bad Batch are kind of like her kids in a weird way when you look at it like that. But they're all obviously designed with their own interesting mutations that Omega is kind of designed to learn from. And what's interesting about that is when you think about it from a parenting standpoint, and I say this as the parent of a 7-year-old who gets taught something every day by her, right? Like that she reminds me to find joy in things that probably I've grown callous to, right? That there's things that she goes, this is so fun. This is awesome. You know, hey, check out what I can do. And something that I'm like, that is worth celebrating. My gosh, like my kid just reminds me to do things we're talking about Star Wars here, right? We still have to suspend our disbelief to make all of this make sense, right? And like, there is no better way than the mind of a child, right? And that's a good quote. I wish they would incorporate that in Star Wars somehow. But something about Omega's journey that has used the Bad Batch as a way for her to learn and teach simultaneously is very well written. And I think when we see the end of it, we're going to really understand Omega's role in this whole thing, because you're absolutely right, Adam. Like, her character arc is insane. It's not as dramatic as Ahsoka's, but it doesn't make it any less than important. Ahsoka does right. represent the, what do you want me to do? Go stare down the galactic, you know, the First Order with the light sword. Mm-hmm. She is literally going to tear down Grand Moff Tarkin's Hemlock's project, clearly. But like, Omega is going to take this down. This is the staring down the First Order with her way. This is her defeating Maul on Mandalore. This is Cassian Andor getting, you know, this is Jyn Erso's getting the plans out to the rebellion to be able to defeat the Death Star. I mean, like, this little kid might disrupt one of the most important things that the Galactic Empire is not able to do, or at least do in a bad way, to make it so that the Emperor does not actually truly succeed in the best way that he can. Because by the time we see him in Rise of Skywalker, dude is not good. He's not ready to come. He's not ready to take over the galaxy. And that might have been due to Omega. Like, dude, the implications are insane.
Yeah. And she's stoked about the challenge. Chop it all off.
That's right. That's right. With she all of this led up to the Rise of Skywalker just because of her little toothpick that she's got. I mean, you got to appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, yeah, but I'm psyched. Let's go kill some birds.
Let's go kill some birds.
Yeah. All right. To wrap it up, though, her plan, which she gets into, she's going to break into one of those sort of dumbwaiter elevator tunnels that the droids come down to the cells to get the blood samples with, right? So through that, those lead right out of the vault into the lab. They'll escape through there. That's her plan. And she opens it up enough to see that it's possible, closes it back up when the other Dr. Scalder, Stacey Leanne in the patron chat, thank you. Go. Dr. Scalder comes to check on her. Nothing to see here. You know, it's classic suspense action movie timing. You know, you think, here she comes, here she comes, here she comes, and, oh, I'm fine, what's going on?
Yep.
You know, it's good. It's good stuff. All right, we have a bunch of stuff in the Den of Antiquities to talk about. Lots of interesting crap. So let's go ahead and get into it.
For over 1,000 generations.
It is the Darksaber.
Run! Oh, gosh!
It's a Kalikori.
A Sith Wayfinder.
Dark science. Cloning. Secrets only the Sith knew.
The Den of Antiquities. The title of the episode, Into the Breach, is a reference to a line from Shakespeare's Henry V. In a speech King Henry V gives to rally his troops, he says, "Once more unto the breach, dear friends, once more, or close the wall up with our English dead." Too long didn't read, one last attempt, we either win or we die trying. Which, let's freak out for a second. Someone's going to get it, right? Someone's going to get it. We just know it. I think that's a good callback right there to, of course, Shakespeare playing absolutely zero role in Star Wars. I mean that with all humor. In the space station orbiting Coruscant, we again get to see the vacuum tube being used to load droids into a ship. We mentioned on one of our previous episodes that this calls back to a similar system used on the Jawa Sandcrawler in A New Hope, but also, get a load of these guys. A clear dome that exposes all of the little parts inside.
Look at that.
What's really cool about this is at the end of the queue, there's a droid with the open style dome. It's an R2 style droid, but he's got the transparent dome. And the astromechs like this have only been seen a handful of times throughout Star Wars history, but they're going all the way back to A New Hope on the Death Star that had never prominently been featured, but you see them in the back there. Old plastic dome right on the top there. This is an old school throwback, Adam the Skull. Nice catch on this one. Is that one on the left, is that blue? Is that blue or is that, that looks blue, right? Or is it gray?
It looks like a bluish color, yeah. Like almost like gunmetal.
Yeah, that's unbelievably cool. So I think this is a really great callback to let us know that, like, we are getting further and further into A New Hope. And in Legends, they were actually labeled as R3 series. But when you dig deep, it turns out there are actually no hard rules on how astromech droids are designated. So go ahead and just, if you're building a droid, call it whatever. Do whatever.
Call it whatever.
Do whatever. But we definitely know that the astromech style, we call them R2 units. That's fine.
Yeah.
Let it go. But you know what? Whatever you want. If it's the dome, go for it. R5, R6, R7, whatever. Have fun with it. The top-down establishing shots of Tantiss that we mentioned earlier. We return to the visual language of the season premiere with these. This is a beautiful shot right here. I love this. Bringing back the circular imagery symbolizing a clock face as we tick-tock down to the finale. I think that's a good call right there. Even the three tables in the vault room resembling complications on a watch face. Complications being the term for the smaller dials and mechanisms for things like stopwatches, timers, other time zones, calendars, etc. Maybe even the doomsday clock.
Maybe even.
2 minutes.
You keep that on your wrist.
2 minutes to midnight. The scene where the Batch and Rampart infiltrate a control room in the Imperial Station to get the navigational data from the science vessel looks pretty similar to another interior control room that you've seen in the Death Star Control Room 327 in A New Hope, where the crew accesses the computer to get the detail on the tractor beam, where they then get up with the plan to infiltrate the detention block. TK-421, do you copy, et cetera, et cetera. I see it mainly in the red stripe. I think that's awesome. And of course, all these different little buttons with these. I mean, that's like we are arriving.
It's right there. I mean, they've got the added console in the middle. But aside from that, those, what I think were like, what was it, like a hydroelectric power plant controller, right, control thing or something that, yeah, they built this out of in the 70s.
Yeah.
We've seen this quite a bit. It was in Rebels a lot, but it's cool to see it here this early, you know?
Yeah. And I'm actually looking in the back there. I guess I never realized how many references to the actual Death Star were on the screens. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome.
There's also, I was looking at all this stuff today and how all of this visual language is starting to come up to the surface. Even the station itself, the top of it, it's early Death Star tech. It's
right.
Early Death Star architecture.
Right.
And I just love it.
Yeah. Well, let's get into this next part because I think there's something interesting in here too. Speaking of control rooms, other people walking around in them, the person that they stun is an Imperial weapons technician, aka the Imperial Gunner or Death Star Gunner, as we know them. So you'll see this kind of goofy looking helmet with just the single visor. It's got the telemetry unit on the side. Now, a fun little thing about this is we've actually seen them a couple times. They have the same helmets as the one in A New Hope, but the white uniforms are unique. I think this is the first time that we've seen them, but they have the classic Imperial belt. They've got the gauntlet gloves. Now, if you go back to the Death Star Gunner, right? Now, people are looking at this chess piece here, right? And this is interesting. I mean, this is cool. What a lot of people don't know about this, I'm tapping into my inner armor party right here, is this is actually a protective bib that motorcycle, like dirt bikers and motocross used to wear, to protect them in case they flew forward and hit themselves on a handlebar. And you can see that they just simply turned it to the side and painted it. That's where you got your Sand Trooper pauldron from. So these were featured in white, all black, and orange in A New Hope. You can see that they were different designations. The most famously, the orange pauldron that you see in, when they go to Mos Eisley and the, where are these droids? What are you doing with these droids?
Look, sir, droids.
Look, sir, droids actually has a white pauldron on. So he is, I believe, a lieutenant. And then we have some of the other ones, some of the troopers that have a black pauldron, but they don't have a backpack on, a filtration pack. So you're getting a little detail here. This is where this stuff comes from. And when you really think about it, there's so little things that actually were created new for Star Wars. Like, they found little parts that George Lucas was cheap, right? So he made the stormtroopers, and after that, there was a lot of stuff that he just said, repurpose, get, put the Greeblies on it, figure it out. And this is a classic example of original trilogy repurposed tech that all of a sudden it went from a German MG34 machine gun to suddenly stick a couple pieces on it. And then all of a sudden it's a DLT-19. Congratulations. You have a space gun. So that's a pretty cool little part there. Now let's go to the planet where Echo meet the Batch, which is called Bora Vio, which first appeared in season 1, episode 9, Bounty Lost. And this is where Cad Bane delivered Omega back to the Kaminoans. So this is kind of an interesting, it's got a Bespin vibe. It's a gas giant. Mm-hmm. It floats. These space stations, they hover. They're kind of like a collection, a little cluster of cities up here. The color of the planet.
Well, actually, before you get to that, I had a realization after I took all these notes and put these in here.
Okay.
This is the other planet where this is like the secondary Kaminoan cloning facility, right? On this other planet.
Right.
But notice those stations, as much as they look like the Cloud City station on Bespin, they also look just like Topoka City.
Yes.
You know, it's the same sort of like Hershey's Kiss kind of shape.
Yep.
So there's that. But when I was watching this, I completely forgot about this other planet. What is it called again? Bora Vio?
Bora Vio, yeah.
I completely forgot about it. I'm thinking, is this Bespin?
No.
I mean, it's got the colors, you know? It's not, obviously, but it's got the colors. We've got these like orangish, pinkish hues in the clouds, and there's some blue there. So I'm thinking Bespin, there it is. You know, we've got the classic, you know, color grading's a little different in the original trilogy, but it's got that orangish pink kind of hue. And here it is again, you know, Luke hanging.
Sure.
You've got the top of Cloud City.
Right.
But then if you look at the shot of them leaving the planet, it's blue. Like the atmosphere is blue from the view from space.
Yep.
Which is confusing. And then I thought, okay, well, that can't be Bespin because Bespin's orange. So I went down the rabbit hole.
Okay.
Again, it's not Bespin, but I went down the rabbit hole. Here's the shot on the planet. This orange is pink. Okay. Then from space, blue, right?
Okay. Weird.
But then so is Bespin. You know, like we always think of it in this pinkish orange kind of color. But I went back through The Empire Strikes Back and there's a ton of blue.
Interesting.
There's the X-Wing arriving, you know, there's wide shots. Uh-huh. It's just puffy blue clouds, normal stuff.
Huh.
But then I realized, oh, duh.
The sun.
It's the location of the sun. Like everything we see when they first arrive is almost sunset.
Right. So if there's a lot of moisture in the air, there's a lot, obviously it's gas giant, right? So it has different reflectivity of sunlight, of different rays, of a different spectrum.
And the sun bending, you know, from the curvature of the planet.
Right.
It bends and only, you know, certain wavelengths make it around that curve.
Right.
And that changes that's why a sunset looks the way it does, right?
Yeah. Okay.
But then I went and looked at the wide shot of Bespin when Luke is first arriving, and it's the same thing.
Huh.
It's like a purplish blue. So these are different planets, but the people that have the pen or pencil or, you know, Wacom tablet pen in their hand, they're smart. They understand these things.
Yeah,
they're not just throwing shit at the wall.
That is interesting. All right, so we got to get I hope Scott listens to this because that would be a very interesting thing for them to comment on because I think I there's something in here. I'm with you that I think that if there was a moment to call out Bespin, I think they would have, right? I just at this point it's like, you know, we can sometimes the problem is that if they reference a planet in Star Wars, if they were to say Bespin, they'd go, we're going to finally see Lando Calrissian again. You know, it turns into all that. Right. So, I can appreciate that they went with a new planet, but this is some space camp stuff right here, man. I can appreciate this.
I went deep. It was fun. It was ultimately disappointing in the end when I found out what planet it actually was, but the consistencies in terms of like the different times of day, the different atmospheric conditions, they're consistent, you know? So we've got two different gas giants that are bound to the same principles of physics and you know, climate and everything else. So
And all our patrons who take pictures are like, everyone knows that Bespin is always best at golden hour and magic hour for photos. It's awesome for sure.
All right.
That's interesting.
fun nonetheless.
Yeah, I love that. All right.
I was stoked for a second, like, oh, here we go. We're going to get another hit on the bingo card, but no. Yeah. No OT planet.
Yeah, that's okay.
Wah, wah.
That's okay. We'll get there soon, eventually. Yeah, maybe.
That said, nothing to report on the bingo card results. Nothing.
Man.
Not even the patrons, man.
Next week could just be, it could light up like a Christmas tree, man. We have no idea what's going to happen next week.
Well, here's hoping, as they say.
Right. I think next week is even a shorter episode. I hate to break your heart. I think it's only a 22-minute episode. But before we freak out, that could also mean that it is a visually impressive episode where they were like, we got a lot of render time. Let's make this one a little shorter because this is going to make the computers cook. So let's bring it back down. So we'll see. No bingo card results. That's fine. I'm already looking forward to next week. I think we got another section that we should talk about.
I love you.
I know.
Favorite moments, favorite quotes, favorite scenes, etc. Let's go to the patrons here in Discord and get some of their favorites before we talk about ours. Stacey Leanne has a couple. Everything Echo and Omega. Everything they said and did, she says. This move, she sent a GIF of Echo coming into the hangar on top of this, I guess, stack of like cargo crates. And he does this.
Yep.
This sick, like, I'm saying sick while laughing. It's a complete over-the-top, like, roll, duck, turn to get behind the thing. It's, what am I thinking of here? Like, it's like MacGruber or something. You know what I mean?
Sure,
it's just
right.
Like, it's way too much.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, Echo telling Rampart he's been demoted. That was great. All that banter with Rampart was awesome. Omega being Omega.
Very satisfying.
Immediately planning her escape and recruiting the other kids. So smart, so badass. Hunter responding negative and attaching their ship to the Imperial ship. His Joel Miller era has been activated. What does that mean? Who's Joel Miller?
Oh, man. I guess I didn't realize that Joel Miller is from The Last of Us. I didn't realize.
Oh, his last name was
Miller. I guess I just didn't know that, but here we go. Yeah, sure. So that makes sense.
And lastly, Wrecker responding with.
Captaining?
Yeah.
Amazing. I love that.
And then the Imperial hat, putting it back on the Imperial. Good stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Let's see. Sky's Limit says, I loved Omega getting her Hannibal Smith on, but this shot made me audibly gasp. And Adam Skull, look at that. You guys both had an appreciation for the symbology of this episode.
Yeah, the top-down circular imagery.
So
awesome.
Good. My Nerd Story's favorite quote was when Rampart says, what, do you think I'm lying? And everyone says, yes, in unison. I thought that was amazing. Favorite scenes from my Nerd Story was Echo sneaking onto the ship. Very Metal Gear Solid. Great call out right there. Solid Snake, absolutely. Wrecker wrecking the imp, asking him about their ship. So coming on and being like, yeah, let me check this. And you just watch him just wind up and then just like it disappears. Hunter docking at the last second so they could get to Tantus. After Crosshair missed the shot to get the tracker on the ship, taking Omega, it was nice to see the team come through at the last second so they can attempt to rescue her. I loved that too. The Tantus score, Kelly gave a huge shout out to the Tantus score. When you hear that synthy sound, you know that shit's going to get dark. You know what? I agree with you, Kelly. I think that's fantastic. And the blue guy, I like if you're sneaky around the Imperial base, all you need to do is name drop Tarkin and they'll let you go anywhere they want. Yeah. That's true. Security at the Imperial base is like everyone is terrified of each other. It is pretty easy to walk around and just throw that in there, right? Like, you know, demoting two low ranking Imperials just because they were afraid of Tarkin, of Governor Tarkin at the time. I think that's hilarious. Adam, what about you? Favorite moments, favorite parts of this episode?
As much as I loved Omega with the kids and all the character arc sort of hitting the bend when we see her settling in. You know, I mentioned the elbows on the table. All that stuff is great. But I couldn't help but get swept up in the suspense and the fun of the heist.
Yeah.
Even though the stakes are so high, it's still so fun the way they do it.
Sure.
And at the end, Echo's in the science vessel and he's trying to hack into the ship and disable the proximity sensor. And Rampart keeps trying to tell Hunter,
you got to abort the mission. Yep.
Nope. Nope. You got to wait. You got to abort, whatever. And he's like, nope. And he just goes for it. And he goes, he's inverted, got me there. And they clamp on the bottom. They take off. It's just like a perfectly paced, absolute like fist pumping way to end the episode. Yeah. So that ending, that last sequence was my favorite.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I think there's a part about this episode where Echo's been fairly, I don't want to say missing from this season, but I don't want to say underutilized, because I think that they're utilizing him exactly. I think the difficult part about Echo is that he almost is like overpowered compared to the rest of the Bad Batch, right? Because when you have this like cybernetic attachment, it makes it so that I think the reason that they had to give Echo and Tech a little space is because in some ways, some of their skill sets kind of crossed over, right? So with Tech gone, Echo kind of needed a couple big wins, right? Because he's kind of been this character that's shown up and done a job, and he's played his part where he needs to, and doesn't really have a whole lot of doesn't screw up a whole lot, and I think that's really awesome that they use him for, they don't overuse him and overuse that skill set. But what I think, when you look back on Echo and how much the clones didn't trust him, because they assumed that he was some kind of, he was a plant, he was the separatists, were using him, he was putting code so that he wouldn't, they just straight up didn't trust him. And he had struggled to kind of see where he would fit in and his purpose of wanting to say, I'm going with Rex, I've got to help other clones. I think there is something in this story for Echo that is going to play the part in being able to liberate clones. Is we're getting to that point where the whole Bad Batch are going to Tantus. We know that there's a hell of a lot of clones being tested on. There's clones that are still enlisted by the Empire that don't really know that they're being taken advantage of. And so I think this was a win for Echo this week. And I think it was played just right, because it wasn't overly Echo's win. He still got his moment to look cool and sneak around, but that trust that the Bad Batch have of Echo in his whole arc of being a science experiment himself and then going to liberate other science experiments, I'm like, man, that's some poetic stuff right there. So yeah, I think this was an Echo episode that was a super fun one, just like you said.
Loved it.
Yep.
Absolutely loved it. All right, we're going to wrap up. And as we do every week, for the bonus segment for patrons after this, we'll go to the Star Wars chat pack, 125 conversation cards by Kelly Knox. The question this week in the technology category is, this is a good one. If you own the Millennium Falcon, would you keep it spotless like Lando Calrissian, or get it messy like Han Solo? We'll talk about that in the bonus segment for patrons. If you want to hear that, patreon.com/thanktomakerpod is the place to go.
Adam, tell them a little bit real quick though, to join our Patreon, what's the lowest tier that you can join our Patreon?
$5 a month.
$5. So if you buy,
you get all the bonus stuff.
You're basically buying us a coffee.
Yeah.
And you get access to our Discord with all of our friends in our Discord. You get news on Mos Eisley when it breaks. We have a couple little perks on the inside, but all in all, it's just merch. Great merch. It's a great community to be a part of. So if you're kind of saying, hey, how do I get more of this content? How do I get more of the fray? How do I get more Thank the Maker? $5 a month. That's it. That's all we're asking. And we're, as you say, you literally keep the lights on. So we appreciate all of our patrons and all of our Discord members for having fantastic discussions every time there's a new Star Wars episode. I love it.
And if you don't want to spend that $5 a month, or you can't, and you just want to support, you want to show support in whatever way possible, share the podcast on social media, rate and review us on whatever podcatcher you listen to, or on YouTube, comment, anything, just engage. It all helps. It all helps. Whatever you can do. It doesn't have to be money. But we appreciate everyone for listening and watching. We appreciate the patrons so much. We love you. And if you could speak to us right now, hopefully you'd say, I know. Mike, good hanging with you, bud. And until next week, may the Force be with you. If you enjoy Thank the Maker, you can support us by following and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Or you can support us directly at patreon.com/thankthemakerpod, where you can get access to our Discord server, exclusive content, exclusive merch, our recording live stream, and more. Our patrons quite literally make Thank the Maker possible.